me tonight for game two of the Eastern Conference Finals between the Heat and the Celtics, and it's going to be a good one. Jimmy Buckets got plenty of them in game one, scoring 27 of his 41 points in the second half to beat Boston 118-107. To talk game two, we bring in our friend Brian Windhorst, who's also taking in that Miami Sunshine. Windy, the Celtics have to figure out a way to stop Jimmy Butler. One way to do that would be to have the Defensive Player of the Year, Marcus Smart, on the court. What's the latest on him and Al Horford?
Christine, we got good news and bad news for the Celtics injury front right now. So Marcus Smart has been upgraded to probable. I do believe he's going to play, try to play tonight. But within the last few minutes, the Celtics just announced that Derek White, who's one of their key defensive perimeter players, is going to miss tonight's game due to personal reasons. So one step forward, one step back in terms of depth. And, you know, this is a factor because one of the reasons why the Heat were so successful in the second half of game one is that they attacked Peyton Pritchard, who had to play way more minutes than normal. And now even if Marcus Smart is effective and is able to come back and play close to normal minutes, which we may not want to assume because he's got this sprained foot, with no Derek White, they're going to have to, again, rely on Pritchard. So that's one thing. Now the Al Horford issue. He is listed as doubtful for tonight, and that is not a surprise because in health and safety protocols, typically the minimum you're going to be out is 5 days unless you test out. And testing out has multiple stages and is not simple in terms of timing. So the fact that he would not play in tonight was something the Celtics were prepared for. But they also have the reality that he very well could not be available, depending on how he's feeling, depending on how the tests go, for Saturday's game three. And you look up and down the Celtics roster. You've got Robert Williams, who is back but still dealing with the knee issue. You've got Jason Tatum dealing with a wrist issue. You've got Jaylen Brown still coming off of a hamstring issue. This is a very good team, but they are not particularly deep. They really only run about seven and a half players. So these injuries are a real threat to this series and their chances at a title.
Windy, I'm not sure if you know this, but have we found out whether if Al Horford has had a negative test yet or not?
I don't know that. Okay. A couple of things that are important, Jay, I can tell you. Al Horford, on the record with the Boston Globe within the last 6 weeks, has said that he is vaccinated. I still am not 100% clear whether he's symptomatic. Ime Udoka, by the way, I should point this out. Ime Udoka missed yesterday's availability due to what the Celtics called the non-COVID illness. And the Celtics have several other positives within their traveling party. So everything right now is a little bit fragile. But the last time we checked with Ime Udoka, he said that Horford, quote, felt fine. So being symptomatic is a factor here. And we don't have an update on how Al is feeling. We'll hopefully get that later today.
Wow. I mean, obviously not having Al Horford really hurts the Boston Celtics just because of his ability to spread the floor. But also, you know, Windy, the experience, right? Like, that is a guy, he's a constant communicator, one of the backbones of the defense, a guy that can communicate to the guards what all the actions are on every single ball screen as that changes due to personnel. And also, like, his ability to make shots, and that allows Bam Adebayo to literally roam the paint. And that makes it difficult for guys like Jason Tatum or Jaylen Brown to even get into those gaps to find a way to finish at the rim or kick it out to three-point shooters. But the thing that is interesting most of all is Marcus Smart trying to come back and not be fully healthy. With now Derek White being out, you're still going to need to utilize Peyton Pritchard. And I said it before you came on, Windy, and I love Peyton Pritchard. I watched him play at Oregon. He's one heck of a player, tough as nails, made some difficult shots for them in game one. But there's certain players as an NBA player, when you see them walk on the floor, if you get to an Eastern Conference Finals or a semis or a world championship, or heck, even back in college, if a guy gets hurt, you see him, you know, like, all right, you are going to be the guy. And how you play today will dictate whether your team can stay in this game or whether your team gets beat up. Because Spo will find a way to get Peyton Pritchard to guard Jimmy Butler or get Peyton Pritchard to guard who they want in all the action. And that is a major concern for Ime Udoka and the Boston Celtics.
Yeah, and one thing I will say that, you know, the Heat are missing Kyle Lowry. He will miss the game, but They are 7-0 without Kyle Lowry in these playoffs. And one of the reasons is because they get tremendous play off the bench from Gabe Vincent, a guy who's an undrafted player who they've developed throughout the season. The Heat doesn't have the same top line talent, I don't think, as the Celtics, although I'm sure a Heat fan or somebody from the Heat organization would be glad to debate me or you on that issue. But the Celtics' depth is not comparable to the Heat's depth. The Heat could really comfortably play 9 or 10 players in this series without even breaking a sweat. And again, they would probably argue they could go deeper, but realistically, 9 or 10 players. The Celtics are just not at that factor right now. And again, the rest situation, even though we're into game two when there was no travel, the rest situation still favors the Heat. So, you know, a real tough spot for the Celtics to be in. I will say that they are very resilient. Remember, they were down three different times in the series to the Bucks, 1-0, 2-1, and 3-2. They have won four road games in this playoff so far. So I am certainly not counting them out, but, you know, the hand that they're holding continues to deteriorate a little bit.
Wendy's not counting them out. Jay Will, do you feel like Boston absolutely needs to win this game tonight in order to make this a series?
No, I do not. I still believe they can go home and defend home court, but I'm extremely concerned about this series right now. And for me, not having Marcus Smart fully healthy, Wendy, you went through all the names. Robert Williams coming off that back injury. You talk about Jason Tatum, the dunk on Giannis, the wrist injury, how he's dealing with that. Jaylen Brown coming off injury to a degree. How Marcus Smart guards the likes of Jimmy Butler will be critical to tonight's game. And that will be tested each and every possession. And now not having Derek White, another guy that can initiate your offense or even just spread the floor once again, we understand how pivotal that is when you play a team like the Miami Heat, who can shrink the floor when you get into those gaps. Guys have to be ready to shoot. That's a major loss. So, I mean, look, Marcus Smart can help them initiate the offense. I think Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown have to explode. Those two need to be prolific tonight. They need to be prolific. And you need to get some kind of Herculean performance from Marcus Smart in order to compensate for all the pieces that are missing, because here's the one thing I do know about the Miami Heat. And you talked about, Wendy, living down there for a short stint. I lived down there for 3 years. I spent some time with some of those guys. When they smell blood in the water, they are sharks. Like, they pounce on that kind of stuff. Or most teams might come in, you might say, well, do they really respect their opponent? They always respect their opponent. And they will play even harder now that they do smell blood in the water.
And they're also a very good home team throughout the season and in these playoffs. They've been terrific here in Miami. The one thing I'll say, the Celtics didn't feel miserable about that outcome in game one. They won three of the four quarters. Now, the third quarter was abysmal. It was an absolute devastating situation. So I know that that's not much of a consolation prize, but the Celtics do feel like they had some traction in some areas. And even though Marcus Smart may not be 100%, having him in there to initiate offense should help Jason Tatum. Where the Celtics lost control of the game was in the third quarter, and they were having to rely on Jason Tatum to initiate offense. He had six turnovers in the third quarter alone. Now, two of them were Jimmy Butler swatting his shots. It had nothing to do with who was the point guard. But several times he got his pocket picked or threw a pass because he was having to play more point guard, having to bring the ball up. So that should free Tatum up a little bit. And he did, even though he would have, you know, what would be called, you know, a below average or below acceptable game because his second half wasn't so great, he still scored over 30 points yet again. He is averaging over 30 over his last six games. So Tatum is there. Jaylen Brown is there. The Celtics are still very potent. It's just that their margin for error, which, you know, Jay, at this point in the playoffs, your margin for error is so important. Their margin for error is getting very narrow against a team in Miami that, you know, doesn't make a lot of mistakes.
Wow.
You mentioned that third quarter being abysmal. Miami won that one 39-14. So, yes, it was not great. Thanks so much, Wendy.
All right, Wendy.
Seeing you. Have fun in Miami.
Stay cool down there.
Hey, I'm Molly Karam, and thanks so much for listening to the First Take podcast. Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Game one of the Western Conference Finals might have left those of us looking for a competitive game, wanting more. The Warriors blew out the Mavs, and it wasn't really close for most of the game. 34-year-old Steph Curry led all players in points, rebounds, and tied the lead for assists. Jay, it's just us two right now, and I'm going to ask you a question because obviously Stephen A. has an opinion on this that we've heard. What is the gap between the Warriors and the rest of the teams remaining in the playoffs?
Well, first off, I made the wrong bet. I tried to double down on my Memphis Grizzlies bet and lost two Tom Ford suits to Stephen A., where I really had him down one Tom Ford suit. Anyway, that's fine. It happens. Now we owe each other nothing, and we can start over. But, look, the Golden State Warriors are the best team in the Western Conference, but I don't think the gap is that large. I do. This is a game of nuances, right? So we obviously have seen the Memphis Grizzlies be right there when they need to be there with Ja Morant missing the last several games. But it still felt like even when they took that whooping in Memphis, right, when they're down 50-plus points, I mean, that goes to show you about how the Memphis Grizzlies continue to play. They're only going to get better. You have the Minnesota Timberwolves. I mean, look, we've had Patrick Beverley in here who's created one hell of a stir over the last 3 days.
Right.
But that is the DNA. That is the mentality that now is around a guy like Karl Anthony Towns. Now, we'll find out where D'Angelo Russell went during their playoff series because you can't average 12 points. And a lot of that has been questions around his leadership and how he works. But still, you think Minnesota is only going to get better. Anthony Ant Edwards, he is an absolute beast, a star, right? So you think about that. Phoenix will be back. Obviously, there are questions around DeAndre Ayton. What's going to happen with Ayton? Will they extend him? Those things are looming. But still, you know, CP3, Devin Booker, all these guys are going to be there. So, like, there are a lot of teams. We didn't even talk about the Clippers.
Right.
Like, we have not talked once about Kawhi, Paul George, and how they play. And when those guys are fully healthy with Ty Lue, who understands how to win world championships, how to win division titles, how to win conference titles, Ty Lue is one of the best areas to do that. LeBron James has stamped him and the Los Angeles Lakers. What moves will they make? And last but not least, and this is one of my dark horses for next year, you will hear a lot about them in the offseason, the Denver Nuggets, man. I am high on the Denver Nuggets. If Jokic can continue to improve, two-time MVP, if they're able to get Jamal Murray back, he was questionable to come back during the playoffs. People want him back. He didn't feel comfortable coming back. With Michael Porter Jr. and his health, with some of the pieces that they have depth. Golden State is the best team, but still, like, an injury happens, things change, right? So it will be competitive for them for time to come.
Mari Stoudemire joining us today. Hello. Welcome. Okay, so we're talking about the West. Obviously, the Mavs got blew out last night, right? How big is the gap between the Warriors and the rest of the field?
Well, I mean, it's not that big of a gap. I think the Warriors are somewhat aging a bit, right? So you know, they still have an advantage on a lot of their competition. But teams are catching up to their style of play. So it's not that big of a gap, but they do have an advantage.
In a couple of years, let's say 3 years, where do you think Memphis would be compared to Golden State?
Well, it depends on how players develop, right? Because you got to continue to get better and better each year. Some guys get, you know, become successful and they say, hey, I got paid. I want to relax now. And they don't continue to, you know, perfect their craft. And also, too, about, you know, front office-wise, who are you going to bring in to support your stars? So it depends on all those intangibles. If that happens well for them, then they can compete for, you know, for a title, hopefully, in the next few years.
Here's the thing that's interesting. Like, championship teams and teams that have a long runway have a great combination of experience and youth, right? So, yeah, we've seen Draymond Green have some injuries this year. We've seen Steph Curry have an injury this year. Klay obviously coming back after not playing for multiple years. But Jordan Poole It's almost like Aaron Judge in the Yankees, right? A guy that's grew up in the system, mm-hmm. that understands his place, but also is emerging to be one of the best there is.
Right.
I'm not saying comparable to Aaron Judge because he's the best player in baseball right now. But I have to say, like, Jordan Poole is prolific.
Right.
And there are times, let's be honest, where we always know who Stephen Curry is and Klay Thompson. But there are times when you watch Golden State games, you're like, yo, Jordan Poole might be the best player on the court right now.
Right.
And having that as a young gun in your system that continues to elevate your level of play when you can't do it, like, that's what gives you the thought that Golden State could be around for a long time to come in the next 2-3 years because of the emergence of Jordan Poole.
Wendy, let's bring Brian Windhorst into this conversation because, like I said, obviously the Mavs got blew out last night. How do you view the Warriors after that game last night?
Well, they obviously are still an incredibly formidable opponent, but, you know, when they had these two down years that they had, they took that time to, you know, sort of backfill their roster. And so now they have two very intriguing young players in Jonathan Kuminga and James Wiseman, who we haven't seen much from yet. Wiseman's basically missed his first 2 years, but he was the number two pick in the draft for a reason. And so they, you know, are going to, I assume, sign Jordan Poole to a contract extension this offseason. And they are going to see how they can grow those guys to sort of come in and step in to help Steph Curry in the back end of his prime. But guys, the Western Conference, over this next 1 to 2 years, it's going to be incredible talent race because at some point you think the Clippers are going to get healthy again and they're going to rise back to contender status. You look at the Grizzlies, you look at the Wolves, the ascendant teams, you look at the health of the Denver Nuggets. And then Luka, I think it's Luka, I really am believing that it's going to be Luka Doncic's league. And so you give the Mavericks another transaction cycle or two, plus guys who are going to want to go play there with him, their upside is great. The reality of the short and middle term of the Western Conference is the reason why Phoenix's loss was so devastating, because this was a year where that team, which has an older star in Chris Paul, might have been able to shoot the gap, so to speak. And why, if you're a Laker fan, you got to feel a little sick to your stomach, because the Lakers, as they look at the overall talent out there that they're going to have to fight with and what they've got, they don't have anything like that, the reinforcements, even though they've got LeBron and Anthony Davis. So the Western Conference this year, I would say, is maybe in a little bit of a down cycle, but about to ramp up big time. And the good news for the Warriors is they can compete now and into the short-term future.
I just want everybody to know, because I keep saying blued out, I know it's blown out. I'm saying blued out, like flued out, but y'all probably don't know about that. Anyways, thanks so much, Wendy. Have fun in Miami. All right, now let's look ahead to tonight's game two between the Heat and the Celtics. Boston felt the effects of missing both Marcus Smart and Al Horford in game one. Now Marcus Smart is considered probable for game two, while Horford is doubtful. And on Miami's side, they will still be without Kyle Lowry, so injuries playing a role for both teams as the Celtics look to steal that home court advantage. Amari, we now know also that we're missing
Derek White.
Derek White is out for the Celtics.
Okay.
Due to family reasons. So we know that he's out, so that'll actually take a huge hit for the Celtics as well. So is this a must win for the Celtics team?
I mean, I wouldn't say it's a must win, but you do want to try to steal a game, you know, on the road, right? In the playoffs, if you can get a game on the road, then now you have home court advantage going back to Boston. So I think it's important for them to try to definitely get this win. And I feel as if Jason Tatum is able to establish his dominance in his game, and the team around him can also pick up that, you know, the pace of those guys that were missing with Al Horford and possibly Smart playing limited minutes, depending on how he feels. So you need those other role players to step up big time in game two. So it's very, very important for Boston to get this win to try to regain home court advantage.
It's just that, obviously, whenever you try to get a win, whenever you step your foot. Look,
you're
saying
blown. You're welcome.
I'm saying feet, foot. Whenever you set your feet across that line into that square, you're always trying to win the game.
Sure.
The question is that reality or not? Now, I think Boston still has a legit chance to win tonight's game, even though I would favor the Miami Heat. I would take the Heat to win this game. I mean, spread is 3.5 points. I would take that for the Miami Heat.
Right.
Because I don't know what version of Marcus Smart we're getting. And I know how mentally tough he is. But I wonder how hindered he is going to be with that foot. Now, the thing I do know about Al Horford, not only does he space the floor offensively, but, man, like, he is the guy that communicates to everybody defensively how it works. That is probably one of the most understated things that we are not talking about, that you won't hear media talk about, right? People are going to talk about, well, you know, his spacing and the shooting. And I'm like, no, like, throw all that stuff out the window. It's important, but not as important as when I'm guarding the ball, if I'm guarding Jimmy Butler, mm-hmm. and there's screen action coming. Mario, we were in the same draft class, brother. You know this.
Yep.
If you coming up behind me and you're on my team and you don't let me know which way that screen is coming or what the scouting report is, how we're defending it, I'm on an island by myself.
Absolutely.
Right? So now you have guys like Daniel Tyson. I'm not saying he can't do that. Or Robert Williams. They're trying to do that to a degree, but it's different than Al Horford, a constant voice that you've had around your franchise for a long time, that guys like Jason Tatum, guys like Jaylen Brown, mm-hmm. guys like Marcus Smart trust. There are certain bigs in the league I do not trust. He would have been one of them I would trust. But you know how many times I've had my head knocked off and I'm looking back, my guy Eddie Curry who played with Book, I'm like, Eddie, please, Lord, let me know where this damn thing is coming from.
Absolutely.
That's a huge loss for them.
That's a huge loss. And the thing is, with Al Horford, he's such a great leader. You know what I'm saying? He's battle-proven. He's been in the league for a long time now. And you're right. The communicating on defense is a cornerstone for your defense, right? Because as a big, you're the middle linebacker. You know, you see the entire court. You see what's happening. And if you're communicating about different actions or there's a screen coming up, hey, Jay, screen on your left, force him my way, that helps you defend your guy better. And then also the team hears me communicating, and then they can now follow suit and be in position.
Do you think, Ime Udoka, do you think they'll just blitz ball screens with Jimmy Butler and get the ball out of his hands and force guys like Gabe Vincent or Max Strus to beat you, stay home on everybody else? Force those guys to, I know they're good shooters, but force them to make plays.
Yeah, it's a tough deal because you have great shooters with Miami Heat, right? You have guys that can space the court. So you don't want to overhelp.
Yeah, you got a great shooter who's sitting on the bench and Duncan Robinson that came in five times on the court.
Yeah, exactly. So if you're able to somewhat defend Jimmy Butler by having Marcus Smart on the court, right, you can let him defend him by himself. But you do want to be able to shrink the court and also on your rotation out, be in that passing lane to deter that pass, you know, to make that pass a tougher pass to those shooters, which gives a guy time to get back for the rotation and contest the shot.
When you were at the Brooklyn Nets, how did you guys defend the Miami Heat action? I mean, because there are principles that are similar to Golden State in some of their continuity in which they run. Like, they're a great passing team, and they're great at making reads. Not every NBA team is great at making reads. Might be in spurts, but not the entire length of the game.
Yeah, it's a scramble. It's a scramble game, right? You know, you have your guys you got to focus in on. Jimmy Butler being one of them. Bam Adebayo is another guy who keeps the momentum and the flow of the offense going for Miami. So once you understand how that works and you try to game plan against those guys, you want to have the court shrunk
yeah.
right? So you want to stop those lanes, man. You know, Jimmy Butler wants to get to the basket. You want to get in the paint. You want to get his shot off inside the three-point line. So you want to try to limit those actions. And the best way of doing that is by shrinking the court and allow your guys to rotate out to the shooters.
Can I ask him one last question before
we go?
Because this is where I've been today. This is my brain. Jimmy Butler's playing the best out of anybody in the playoffs, correct? Do you agree with that?
Yes, at the moment.
Okay, ready? So, real hooper. Is Jimmy Butler a top five player in the NBA?
Is he top five player in the NBA?
Is he a top five in the overall landscape of the NBA? Are you willing to say Jimmy Butler, right now, with how he's playing, if you're top five players in the NBA, is he top five?
No.
I agree with you.
Is he the best remaining player in the playoffs right now?
No.
Thank you. Who is the best player remaining
in the playoffs? Is he playing the best in
he's
the playoffs
playing
right
the best.
Now?
See, nuances.
He's playing the best. That's arguably because Jason Tatum's also playing great in the playoffs now. And you do have Luka Doncic, who's also, to me, is the best player in the playoffs right now today.
Okay, you wouldn't give that to Stephen Curry because of his overall resume, even though he's not playing the best? The championship pedigree, being there?
No, he's right there. But right now, as we speak, I think Luka has shown his, like, he's playing, like, this guy's the cornerstone of this team. There's the second fiddle guys on that team is, you know, it's like when LeBron in 07 had, you know, he carried the team by himself and got to the finals. Luka's doing the same thing with Dallas. So
I know, but one of the things I'm starting to lose a little bit of steam on with Luka is and I get it, if you're gifted offensively, nobody really cares what you do on the defensive end, but when you talk about LeBron carrying a team, I at least saw there to be an attempted effort, right? And Monica McNutt came on our show and started talking about Cassidy Hubbard last night was saying, yeah, for Luka, Jason Kidd, it's a two-second rule. All you need to do is hold your guy up for 2 seconds. And I'm like, we're saying about the best player in basketball, all he needs to do is hold his guy up for 2 seconds? I don't know. I'm just starting to question that a little
bit. Right.
Because I'm on the Luka Doncic train offensively, but defensively, when you can't give him back getting into the screen after you turn the ball, I'm starting to question it.
That's a good point. Defensively, I think Jason Tatum has the edge on that because he's a two-way player. Luka's not a great defensive player at the moment, So I understand your point.
Okay.
So you're taking Tatum as the best player right now left in the playoffs. Okay.
It's arguably.
Okay. Okay.
It's fluid, as Stephen A was saying.
It's fluid. It's fluid. All right. Thanks so much, Amari.
First Take fans, listen up. Have you heard you can listen to episodes of this very show ad-free on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership? That's right. All your favorite First Take episodes can be heard on Amazon Music ad-free. But that's not all. You can listen to other top podcasts like The Low Post and PTI ad-free as well. They also have favorite shows like The Daily, Part of My Take, and Up First, all without ads. You know what this means? Uninterrupted listening, so no more cliffhangers. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts, so we know they definitely have something for you. And it's already included in your Prime membership. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app for free or go to Amazon.com/First Take. That's Amazon.com/First Take to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Tiger Woods is currently 1-under through 8 holes in the first round of the PGA Championship. He has 2 birdies and 1 bogey on the day. And I mentioned Michael Collins, a.k.a. the caddy. He joins us now on First Take. And this is just a beautiful bald moment for all of us, just looking great. I love it. I love it for
bald
us.
Bald and beautiful.
I love it.
This is the great part where makeup people come out and panic because they don't have enough powder.
You just You're shiny.
I know.
Y'all
We're
is
bringing
shiny.
All the shine. It's great. It's great. Just bringing all the shine. I'm a little bit
Stop
more mad than you guys.
Stop putting so many lights over our heads. It wouldn't be that bad.
Exactly.
Keep
That's very
front.
True.
Yeah, see,
That's
I'm shiny right
true.
Now. See, all up. Ridiculous.
I'll help you guys out. We can do that later. Michael, as you look at everything that's happened today, what has stood out to you about Tiger's first round?
Nothing has really stood out about it other than on one of the tee shots he hit, they were talking about, you know, most guys they thought were going to take driver. I think it was on 12, they thought, or 14, where they thought guys were going to hit driver, and they didn't. Tiger went to hit a stinger. He's put a special 3-iron in his bag. That's actually a little bit easier to hit. And when he went to hit that stinger 3-iron, he blocked, pushed it just a little bit right and didn't hit like his patented Tiger stinger like we've normally seen him hit. And it kind of flared off into the rough. And actually, that was the hole that he made bogey on. So other than that, today's honestly, here's the deal. Today ain't the day I'm worried about with Tiger Woods. This ain't the day for me going, you know, let's see what Tiger does on Thursday. Nah, it ain't. It was like that at the Masters. At the Masters, because we didn't know what Tiger Woods was going to show up. And the fact that he played the way that he did at one of the hardest walks on tour, it was amazing. But then we saw on the very last hole at the Masters on Thursday, like, uh-oh, he's already out of juice and carried himself the rest of the way through the weekend. Well, now he's had a lot of time to recover, and everyone was talking about, man, Tiger looked great on Monday and on Tuesday. On Wednesday, he looked okay. Today, he looks like better than what he looked in the first round at Augusta, which is awesome. Now it's going to be, what does he look like on Friday? And I think he's going to make the cut, and that's the big day for me is Saturday, is how much juice does Tiger have in the tank for the weekend? Because that's what we're looking at for me for Tiger is – what is he building towards? Trying to win another major. Well, that for him is going to be all about stamina. So, you know, we saw him going from looking great on Monday to looking a little bit ginger on Wednesday, walking a little bit slower. And that's okay. To now we see that birdie on the first hole where people lost their minds. Even me, maybe a little bit, but whatever. That's okay. But, you know, you just want to see kind of health-wise where Tiger's at because that's what he talked about. It's all about the strength and stamina in that leg. So don't worry about today. Look kind of after 9 holes on Friday and then Saturday. Where's his body at then?
Michael, I feel like I'm at this point with Tiger where just having him back on the tour is such a huge win. And I know we automatically, sometimes as fans, what is a great comeback story? It means you need to come back and win majors, right? For me, I'm like, no, like just coming back and being healthy enough to play consistently on the tour is a major championship. And that's a comeback story that's one for the ages considering what he went through. But I am curious from what you've seen thus far, like seeing him on day 3, day 4 of the Masters, right? How you kind of your body rocking side to side off that push up and that follow through on your swing, you kind of saw that diminish over time and, you know, becoming a little bit compensating in that way. I have the same issue to a degree playing golf. Do you see that a little bit in his swing today? Obviously, we know that's going to be a major challenge in day three or day four, but do you see that today or no?
No, not yet. Not yet. He's getting through the ball really well. And that's just a testament to, I mean, the one thing Tiger has always told me is, like, it's no days off. And everybody in his camp tells me the same thing, too. But he doesn't take a day off. And I think the only time he might have taken a day off, and I don't even know if I completely believe it, when he says he didn't do anything Monday after the Masters. I bet he did something. He just didn't do leg day. So what we're seeing now is, like, he is getting through the ball with those legs well. I mean, you see him there. When he turns on that one, that push-off is really well. And the timing, if you're watching his hips, the timing is fantastic. And I think it's going to stay that way. Any mistakes he makes off the tee or with shots with the irons and whatnot, you're going to see it's probably going to be with the hands and the arms because the legs right now are going to be feeling pretty good. Now, people are going to say, you know, oh, he's walking a little ginger or his gait looks different. Listen, I talked to an orthopedic surgeon and even talking to Tiger, his walk is going to be what it is. Mm-hmm. Like, this dude broke that many bones in his foot. Guess what? At that age, after you've had that many knee and leg surgeries and back surgeries, you're not going to walk like you used to ever again. So that part we have to kind of get used to, and it's you have to be able to tell the difference between when you see a guy whose gait has changed and, wait, is that a limp or is that just how he walks? Because there's a difference.
Yeah.
Yeah, and he's walking, you know, with the club, and he also said that walking is the hardest part of the championship right now. We know that Mickelson won the PGA Championship last year, so we obviously know that we're getting a different champion as he's not there this year. Any names that we should be keeping an eye on that will be in contention come Sunday?
Scottie Scheffler.
Yeah, Scottie Scheffler right now, you want to talk about a dude who everything that's changed. And as a caddy, I can tell you, him putting Ted Scott on the bag was a game changer for him as well. I mean, this is a guy who's always had real big confidence in his game and knew that he could compete at the highest levels. But when he brought a guy who had two major championships under his belt as well, because Ted Scott used to caddy for Bubba Watson and they won two Masters together, bringing Ted Scott into the mix, those two together are such a dangerous combination. Now, that being said, you know, you look at that scoreboard and that leaderboard right now, and I was out there Tuesday before I caught my flight here to the studio. I saw Rory McIlroy warming up, and I saw him play a couple of holes. Mm-hmm. And before I left, I told him straight up, as he was walking to play a practice nine holes, something special happened for you this week. Like, it's going to all come together. And the thing about Rory is, when Rory's playing well and it ain't the Masters, you know what he don't have at the PGA Championship? Baggage.
Baggage.
He ain't got no demons. He ain't got no baggage.
Right.
He ain't got no, man, the last time on the 10th, I hit in people's cribs over in the houses. Over. He ain't got none of that. And you can see it. And he's playing with Tiger Woods, which the first time they put him and Tiger together in L.A. at Riviera, Rory walked off of that course and was like, told us all, I needed Tylenol. Like, that was not fun, even a little. But right now, Rory's like, bring it on. Bring it on. Watch what I do with this driver. Hi-yo!
And Rory got that new Nike deal, so I look forward to see what he's going to do with that. I am curious, though, Michael. Let's get back to something that actually matters. You and Joe Buck are hosting an alternative telecast for the tournament, right? Which is insane, by the way. You two are together. What all do we need to know? Like, what all do we need to know? First off, tell me what we're going to get here with this telecast.
Look at how I'm dressed. Do I look like I'm a normal golf type of dude right now today? Like, this is the Tulsa Drillers alter ego for the minor league baseball team. Shout out to the Tulsa Drillers. Their alter ego, they're called the Noodlers, have you ever gone noodling? No. No, I have never been noodling, and no, you ain't never getting me to go noodling neither. But look, imagine what Peyton and Eli Manning do on Monday Night Football. We taking that next level on golf.
Oh, wow.
I got crazy. Both of us got crazy friends that are going to be calling in. Our guest list is stupid. And basically, imagine two guys sitting at a bar watching golf on TV, talking and having fun, and people coming over and sitting with us at the bar. I can't tell you how many people have been like, man, you know what? Golf is so vanilla and sometimes and boring to watch. It's not
Michael,
fun.
It's called this 19th hole. Give me watching golf at the 19th hole. I'm all for it. I need it in my life. Please. Yes.
Don't
thank you.
Think for 1 second
yes.
that at some point during the show, there ain't going to be some ice and liquid
yes.
in here. And mind
hydrated.
Your business what it is.
Mind your business.
What it is.
Stay hydrated.
Yeah, as long as by the end, hey, we're doing 4 hours. As long as by the last hour, me and Joe, I mean, damn it. Tell you about that. Stash shot.
Oh my gosh, it's gonna be so good. Can't wait to watch it. Thank you for bringing this wonderful moment, this beautiful bald moment, all of it, all of your energy, everything.
I need it.
To the show today.
All right, MC.
Yep. Hey, ESPN, order more powder.
Wise words. Thanks, Michael. All right, everyone knows the competition in the SEC is fierce, and now it's getting feisty. Texas A&M claimed this year's top recruiting class, and it has thrown a spotlight on the unintended effect of NIL rights. Nick Saban's tie finished second to the Aggies, and now he's calling out Jimbo Fisher.
We were second in recruiting last year. A&M was first. A&M bought every player on their team, made a deal for name, image, and likeness. All right, we didn't buy one player, all right? But I don't know if we're going to be able to sustain that in the future because more and more people are doing it. Yeah. So it's tough.
So meanwhile, moments ago, Jimbo Fisher has now responded to Saban's criticism. Take a listen.
First of all, I'll say it's a shame that we have to do this. It's really despicable. It's despicable that somebody can say things about somebody and an organization. More importantly, 17-year-old kids. You're taking shots at 17-year-old kids and their families. That they broke state laws. That they're all money. We bought every player on this group. We never bought anybody. No rules were broken. Nothing was done wrong. It was all in the way we do things, the ethics in which we do things. And these families, it's despicable that a reputable head coach could come out and say this when he doesn't get his way. Or things don't go his way. The narcissist in him doesn't allow those things to happen, and it's ridiculous. But when he's not on top, and the parody in college football he's been talking about, go talk to coaches who coach for him. You'll find out all the parody. Go dig into wherever he's been. You can find out anything. And it's a shame that you got to sit here and defend 17-year-old kids and families and Texas A&M because we do things right. We're always going to do things right. But we're always going to be here. We're doing a heck of a job. These coaches have done a great job. Our players have done a great job. The whole organization of recruiting people. It's despicable that we got to sit here at this level of ball and say these things to defend the people of this organization, the kids, 17-year-old kids, and their families. It's amazing. Some people think they're God. Go dig into how God did his deal. You may find out about a guy that a lot of things you don't want to know. We built him up to be the czar of football. Go dig into his past or anybody that's ever coached with him. You can find out anything you want to find out, what he does and how he does it. And it's despicable. It really is. And it's a shame we have to sit up here and have this conversation about things we do. And it's personal to us? Yes, it is. It's personal to A&M. It's personal to our players. It's personal to our coaches and everybody involved. And I know the guy. Know him really well.
Wow. Some really pointed comments there from Jimbo. Obviously,
damn.
Some pointed comments from Nick Saban on the other side. Called him a narcissist. Called him God. What do you think about Jimbo's comments?
I mean, well, first off, Jimbo has every right to be angry.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, these were reckless accusations that were made without presenting any facts. We had Paul Feinbaum on earlier. Even the comments that were made about Deion Sanders were very reckless at a HBCU in Jackson State because of the way he prefaced the commentary for Nick Saban by saying, well, I read in the paper. Well, now we're stating, look, we as public figures, I know that whenever I speak at an event, there are these out. These are being recorded. I don't know what would push Nick Saban to get to that point where he felt like he had to minimize or demean other, you know, franchises or other, you know, schools or people in order to build his program up. Like,
you
have all the success in the world. People have considered you to be the GOAT. And I understand that it is challenging now
that rules with NIL have changed, but you need to pivot in order to continue to leverage you being Alabama in time. That's what every business does. Let's stop talking about college football and college sports in general like it's all, hey, this is amateurism. That world does it no longer exist. What's actually happening right now is people are finally reckoning the fact that we are dealing with business and it's being presented because now people have to be transparent.
Right.
So now you put Jimbo Fisher in a position where he needs to defend himself and his organization and all of his 17, 18, 19-year-old, 20 young men. And then you got Deion Sanders, who is still not spoken yet. And I'm curious to hear what Deion Sanders has to say. So I think Jimbo has every right to defend himself, and this is personal. He's calling them names. I mean, there is a level of narcissism that comes along with being great at something you do.
Right.
And for Nick Saban to sit up there and to say something like that about Jimbo Fisher and Deion Sanders in Miami, 1,000%, that is a narcissist. Now, look, I may not ever go back to visit Nick Saban again.
Right.
Because I called, and I understand he can hold that against me. But when you sit up there randomly and attack other organizations when there's no reason for you to even do that in the first place, I think that's extremely petty. And I think, frankly, Nick Saban is – that's below him to do that.
Right.
It's below him to do that.
Yeah, like Paul Feinbaum said earlier, they're – most likely going to win a championship this year. And he's talking about, like you said, HBCUs and talking about Texas A&M. So we'll see.
I almost said one last thing. I know I said it in our hour one, but the thing that really bothered me the most. Look, first off, attacking Jimbo Fisher, that's one thing. I get it. Even it was unwarranted, unnecessary. Mm-hmm. Jimbo has a right to defend himself. SEC rival.
Right.
Okay. Understand it to a degree. Mm-hmm. Why are you going to go out and attack Deion Sanders at HBCU? I did an interview with Deion Sanders for my podcast, The Limits on NPR, and I talked to him for an hour and a half about the lack thereof resources that he's had at Jackson State and how he's had to manufacture making moves by creating a brand, leveraging his own brand, about how he's had to find ways to raise money so they have the proper busing to games, the proper meals to games.
Right.
And for me, when you start attacking, I'm going to say this personally. A black man who's going back to a historically black college to make a difference.
Right.
Why? Why are you attacking anybody, first off? But why that? He's trying to do something to give back. He's actually creating brands around his players. So almost in a way, I want Nick Saban to say, you know what Deion Sanders is doing? He created a partnership with Barstool Sports. And now people, we know, the masses know to a degree, you know, who these top football players are. But when you start helping them build their own individual brands, i.e. Travis Hunter, who's a big-time player, who now will have a brand built around his whole digital footprint, that's helping him elevate his profile for what is next. Mm-hmm. By the way, that should be part of the curriculum that we're teaching these young athletes, how to manage this in their own brand, how to not have Twitter fingers that turn into us turning into stories and making bigger points that can hurt your image. So that should be part of the curriculum that we teach. Mm-hmm. We should be applauding that. We shouldn't be demeaning that because now NIL is a real thing. By the way, paying players has always been something that has been done.
Right, it was just happening.
It's always been something.
It was just happening.
Ask you about John Wooden. Let's be real about
it. Right.
Since the beginning of time.
Right.
But now we're allowed to do it, but now people have problems with it.
Yeah, it was just happening illegally before, so.
I don't have the patience for that.
We'll see what happens with that situation.
Hey, hey, I'm Molly Karam, and thanks so much for listening to the First Take podcast. You can now stream the most MLB games on DirecTV without a satellite dish. Yes, catch the clutch hits, strikeouts, grand salamis, web gems with nothing on your roof. So whoever's up there, whether it's roofers, Santa, birds, old-time chimney sweepers, moody teenagers, thrill-seeking raccoons, you name it, they won't find a satellite dish, but you will find your MLB games on DirecTV. That means DirecTV is your home for baseball this season. Root, root, root with nothing on your roof. Yes, stream your team. Call 1-800-DIRECTV or visit DirecTV.com to sign up today. Claim based on the total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Thanks so much for listening to the First Take Pod. Have a fabulous day.
Hey, Molly Karam here, and thanks so much for listening to the First Take Podcast.
We all know breakfast is part of your day, but sometimes when you're traveling for business, you end up staying at a hotel that doesn't offer any, and you know what happens. You grab a cup of coffee, you skip the meal entirely. We've all been there. But if you book a room at La Quinta by Wyndham, you can enjoy their free Brightside breakfast featuring delicious baked goods, fruit, eggs, yogurt, even waffles. And really, who doesn't want to start their day with a fresh hot waffle? Come on. Tonight, La Quinta, tomorrow, you shine. Book direct at LQ.com.
All right, how about this take from seven-time NBA champ Robert Horry replying to a tweet that said the 0-1 Lakers versus the 17 Warriors, who wins? He says, we win because Shaq would foul everyone out, Jay. Jay, do you agree?
All right, so obviously this team, 0-1, Kobe Bryant, right. You talk about, of course, Grant, Ron Harper, Robert Horry, big shot Rob, all right, Shaquille O'Neal. I agree with him about the fact that Shaq is a beast offensively, right. But I think one of the things that they don't discount for is that Draymond Green, who's a genius at drawing fouls, he had no way in hell he would guard Shaq.
Right.
Like, I love Dre. Right. Dre's one of the most special players that we have in the game of basketball, mm-hmm. deserving of his contract, honestly, and more because of what he brings to the table, right? Right. Him, Pat Bev. You talk about Marcus Smart, guys that raise and elevate how their team competes on any given night. Respect the hell out of Draymond Green. Can't do anything with Shaq offensively.
Right.
Right? Defensively, excuse me.
Defensively, yeah.
But offensively, the way they move him in all the action. Like, one of the things we did against Shaq is we pushed the tempo of the game. Mm-hmm. Right? So we sprint the ball up the court. We had our bigs sprint up the court right to the block, post up really hard, and then sprint out on different angles mm-hmm. to set ball screens. Because we figured the more we kept Shaq moving, the more he would get out of breath, it would right. take his legs away, and then offensively, inevitably, he would become a little bit more lazy because he didn't have the same wind, or we'd get him taken out of the game. Mm-hmm. So I get the advantage for the Lakers with Shaq, and Kobe's a different one. Maybe Kobe, you know, KD, X each other out to a degree. I don't know about that. It'd be right. interesting to see. Or Klay, because Klay was more in his prime. I still right. give the edge to Kobe, but Klay would be a great matchup. I think Golden State might win that one, though.
Okay.
I think
they
because of the matchup issues.
Right.
The matchup issues in the three ball.
Draymond said that it was his dream at matchup to go against Shaq, but he said he could get one stop.
Well, he's going to have that dream come true. He can go up against Shaq on the TNT crew.
Yeah, exactly.
When he's all said and done.
Right. It's just not done in real life. Game two, Eastern Conference Finals tonight. Who you got?
I mean, look, the injuries for the Boston Celtics are extremely concerning for me. Having Derek White that's going to be out randomly for family issues, he's a guy that can space the floor. He's a guy that can initiate the offense to a degree. Still a veteran presence on the floor, can make the right decisions. You have Al Horford still out in health and safety protocol. Mm-hmm. We're unsure whether Marcus Smart will come back. I believe Marcus Smart will come back tonight. Will he be fully healthy to be right. the great equalizer against Jimmy Butler? I don't think so. I think the Miami Heat win this one tonight. Does not mean, though, that the Boston Celtics are out of the series. Mm-hmm. Derek White comes back. Marcus Smart gets a little bit healthier. Al Horford comes back. You will be seeing a different team that can gain a lot of momentum when they go back to Boston.
Quickly, do you feel like Marcus Smart has pressure to come back and be
1,000%.
Yeah. Okay.
Because now you're out with Derek White, he needs to come
right,
back tonight.
Right.
He has to play tonight.
Okay. Well, I got the Heat because I want to go to Miami and I'm going on the road for the finals. So.
Look, can you take me with you?
I know. Why I should have gone to the Eastern Conference Finals, but, you know, I'm hanging out. Anyways,
Dave
thank
Roberts,
you guys.
Can we talk?
Hanging out with us. We'll see you later.
Have you ridden an electric e-bike yet? You need to check out Lectric e-bikes today, the number one selling e-bike in America. Two things stand out that bikers love about Lectric. Number one, the majority of their models come pre-assembled, so you don't need to be a bike savant to ride them. Number two, Lectric wants to empower riders to spend more time exploring outside on their bikes, so they've made range a priority. Long-range batteries allow riders to hit typically around 65 miles of range or up to 150 miles on some models. Bonus! Lectric has purposefully priced their bikes to be affordably awesome, so you don't have to break the bank to get these sweet rides. See why people who have made the switch to electric bikes have fallen in love with biking again by visiting lectricebikes.com. That's LECTRIC ebikes.com.